Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hello, welcome to another episode of the podcast. Here is a quick iTalki promo before we begin. And this is where I recommend that you use iTalki because it's brilliant, basically. So here we go. Speaking in conversation on a regular basis is a vital part of developing effective, functional and fluent English communication skills. I think everyone agrees with that. And it's now easier than ever before to do exactly that, to talk with people, because you can use iTalki to build speaking time into your routine. You can take lessons from a teacher, have guided conversations with a community tutor, or you can find a language partner. And they're all different ways of getting the practice that you need to get to the level that you want. And iTalki have a special offer for you, and that is a voucher worth $10 when you buy some lessons. You can get that offer at teacherluke.co.uk/talk, or just click an iTalki logo on my website. You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk.
Amber and Paul are on the podcast. Amber and Paul are on the podcast. Amber and Paul are on another podcast. Paul's a very funny boy. His laugh I very much enjoy. Amber's got a lovely voice. If I could choose an accent, hers will be my choice. Yeah.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the podcast. The other day, right, Amber and Paul came over to my flat to record a podcast. What we normally do is they come over. We have our lunch somewhere. Sometimes we have it in the local place just around the corner, or we get takeaway and we have it at my place. We have our lunch and we chat. And while we're chatting, I'm kind of thinking, I wish I could record all of this, because this is all the sort of stuff, the language that just happens when people aren't being recorded. I wish I could just record all of this spontaneous stuff. But we have our lunch, and then I set up all the stuff and I get them to start talking. And I'm just kind of getting the levels right while they're holding the microphones. And I'm just kind of like getting all the levels set up. And then I sort of say, OK, let's start. And I press record and off we go. But often I find it's the conversations before I press the record button that are sort of the most interesting ones. And often I think, I wish I could capture the stuff that we talk about before we actually record the episode. And that's kind of what happened in this one. So we were sitting there, we'd had our lunch, and we were sitting there, we were having tea and chatting and getting ready to record something. I was setting it all up, I'd given them the microphones, and getting the sound levels right, and we just started talking about language. And I think we did that because Paul said that he found it weird that even though he can speak three languages really well, he knows nothing about language itself. He doesn't know the grammatical terms, the rules of what makes things right or wrong or somewhere in between. And we were talking about it, and I quickly managed to press the record button, and I ended up recording about 50 minutes of us rambling on about language, all totally unplanned and spontaneous. And you're about to listen to it. And this is an Amber and Paul episode, so you're going to hear an unscripted and natural chat between friends, so there might be a bit of swearing. Now, before you listen to us discussing language-related stuff, I'd like you to consider these questions, which are at the heart of our conversation. So just to kind of give you a little bit of focus as you move through this fairly random chat, which goes in various different directions, here are some questions which essentially we're talking about. We're trying to answer these questions. We don't necessarily have all the answers. But anyway, here are those questions. I'd like you to think about them and just, you know, see if you can find any answers during the conversation. So first question is, what are some common errors that native English speakers make in English? How do native English speakers feel about mistakes in English, particularly mistakes made by other native speakers? Are some errors worse than others? How does a language evolve? Are errors a part of that process? Has your language or English changed much in the last 100, 200 or 300 years? Is your language or English getting worse than before? Are standards of language declining? And has a language ever broken down and died due to falling standards? Why did Latin die out as a language as well? And on a slight tangent, what is the safest way to cut an avocado? Not particularly language related, but anyway, it's a good question to consider. If you are about to cut an avocado, what's the safest way to do it to avoid cutting your hand? And then back on track with the language stuff again, how does Charles Darwin and the theory of evolution relate to language development? What effect is technology having on our language? Is it making us better or worse at communicating? Are we better at communicating now than we used to be before? Are we getting better at communicating? And how do you even measure that? Do you know more about English grammar and so on than most native English speakers do? Do you know more about grammar than most native English speakers? Do you know more about English grammar than Paul Taylor? And are you better at cooking than Paul Taylor? And also, are you better at cutting an avocado than Paul Taylor as well? So watch out for answers and general rambling on the subject of those questions as you now listen to our conversation about language.
Hello, we're talking about language. Sit down, let's have a chat.
A bit of a chat, sir.
A bit of a chat, yes, Roger, just a bit of a chat.
What about, sir?
About English as a global language.
This is a conversation.
Yes.
I would like to talk to you.
Okay, let's talk. Let's have a quick conversation, huh? What do you think?
That's what we're going to do.
Away, baby, let's go.
We're going to have a good time.
We're going to have a conversation
about language.
I was going to say, I find it weird that I know nothing about language, yet I speak
great languages.
Three languages.
Do you think that's weird?
I find it very strange that I, like, what you just said there sounded like Dutch to me.
We were talking about the split infinitive.
Split infinitives. I know what an infinitive is.
Yeah.
It's just a verb on its own without any conjugation.
It's like to go, to eat, to speak. Yeah. The split infinitive is something that happens, something that sort of native English speakers do, which makes other native English speakers all bent out of shape.
What's an example of a split infinitive?
The most famous one is from Star Trek. You know, these are the voyages of the Star Trek Enterprise, our mission to boldly go where no one has been before.
Mm.
You know, and to boldly go.
Okay, which
you
can't sounds do that. Much better than just to go where
to
no
go
one's
To go boldly
been
where no one has been before.
Oh, so it's where you put a something in between. What's the...
The infinitive is to go.
Yeah, and then what's the thing in the middle called?
Boldly. It's an adverb.
Adverb.
So to boldly go,
okay.
You know, the old rule says that you can't split an infinitive, and so that's wrong.
Mm.
But, I mean, you know, that's one example of a grammar rule that gets broken, and people get very sort of upset about it, and I think it's unnecessary, because they don't really realise how language works, that exceptions or things like that are kind of okay as long as the language is still functional.
I was watching a pretty funny series yesterday, which was The Last Man on Earth. I don't know if you've seen it.
No, I haven't.
And one of the characters in it, she's really funny. She's a comedian and I can't remember her name. But she was complaining because she was saying, you know, you can't end a sentence with a preposition.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh my gosh, that's really hard.
What's
because
a preposition?
At, to, on... Little words that go before nouns that help to add nouns to sentences.
And so there was all these sentences he was saying to her, which ended in prepositions. I can't think of one now. And, you know, having to sort of reform them.
What are you looking at?
Yeah.
Would become at what are you are looking? You
yes, exactly. Clunky. What it felt really clunky
end
to
of.
Change it around. End of.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, there's still some people who will say, you know, you can't end a sentence with a preposition. And they're just being dogmatic. They don't really... You know, the reason that they're saying that is just because they like to impose rules rather than really understanding the way that language works. And, you know, that's how language develops. It's changed so much over the years because of exactly that process.
That's why, I'm a grammar Nazi. Or a Nazi of a... I hate people who are grammar Nazis.
You're a grammar communist.
Yeah.
Mm.
Because I like, for me, language is the only reason language exists in life is to communicate with other people. So if you can do that, then it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what you're saying, as long as the message gets across. And it's that's always been the case. And it's like, if you're gonna be like, well, you can't do this, do that. It's like, well, all right, 100 years ago, the English that you think you speak so well was crap. It was it was terrible English that you spoke.
But I disagree, because Paul, you're a great communicator and you speak beautiful English and French and Spanish. And I mean, I really appreciate when someone speaks in an interesting or thoughtful way. You know, they use interesting vocabulary or it's varied, whatever it is. You know, I think that's really great. So I think it is good to have. But I think there's lots of options of what's interesting or beautiful or nice. And having someone who's just so stuck up on rules, I don't know, it sort of takes away from the language, because to boldly go sounds great, you know?
Yeah.
It's lovely sometimes to have a surprise
but then
in
to
language.
You, it sounds great. It's subjective, though, isn't it? Because clearly some people think it's to go boldly horrific and you can't use this. And
But language, it's nice to have a surprise. You know, when someone speaks, you think, oh, I wouldn't have used those words, or, oh, you've put them together in an unusual way.
So splitting an infinitive is actually, it kind of gives you a few more options.
Yeah. Split the infinitive.
But do you think that all mistakes are okay then? I mean, do you kind of tolerate all errors in English? And I'm talking about errors made by people who have English as a first language. Do you think they're all fine, all those errors?
No. Errors that I think are not appropriate. Yeah. Well, the thing is, I suppose it's you've got degrees of grammar Nazism. You know, I can't bear any of those like I could of, and people think it's of. Yeah. Instead of an abbreviation of have. I mean, that's unacceptable to me.
That's what I was thinking about, because that came up in one of my lessons today.
Yeah. So
I'm
trying to think of another example where we say something now that 200 years ago wasn't correct. But yeah, would have, because it sounds, people when they say, I would have, we say it like that. So why wouldn't we spell it like that? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, but we do spell it like that. It's apostrophe VE.
No, the point is that when you say should have quickly, it goes should have, and of is exactly, we also pronounce of like as of as well, you know, sort of, of good.
That's why I love Spanish, and I talk about this in my show, that Spanish is it's one of the only languages that you write exactly as it sounds. There's only one noise per letter.
Yeah.
And so there's no other way of pronouncing, you have to write it as it sounds. And they had their language used to be like ours, which was a nightmare. And they just went, fuck it, we're going to reform the whole language, change it so that you spell it exactly as it's written.
Right.
I love Spanish people. That's a good idea.
And that's what we need to do with English and French, because they're terrible languages to learn. And language is communication, and it's a shame that you can't, it takes you so much time to communicate, you know, if you're learning a different language.
Just going back to that thing about should of and could of, I think it might be necessary just to clarify it. Because I was teaching that in my class today. I was getting my students to repeat some sentences. And one of the sentences was like, what else? It could have been, it's something like, it could have been something else. It could have been something else. And I was trying to get them to repeat, it could have been something else. It could have been something else. It could have been something else. Mm-hmm. And they couldn't get it. And then I was like, it could have been. And I was like, how do you spell that? Could have been, and they wrote could have been, and I was like, well done, because you know, some people, you know, English speakers write it like this, could of, like of, and they were like, you idiots.
It's like then and than, you know, there's a bunch of English speakers, native English speakers, that say
they mistake than for then.
They write then instead of than. I'm trying to think of a sentence.
Bigger than
right. That avocado is bigger now. No, than it was.
Yeah,
two years ago. Whatever. Yeah, I'm making stupid things. Yeah, but they say then instead
bigger
of than
the other one.
Yeah, bigger than the other one.
Right. Mm. Yeah, I mean, those sorts of things are obviously not correct, and there's, you know, potential for, not just potential for the language sort of breaking down and it not working because it's not being used properly.
Right.
But also, it just makes you look kind of bad, doesn't it?
Has that ever happened?
Where someone doesn't understand another person.
Where a language is broken down and the whole society's gone to shit because, you know, like, I'm thinking there's
it's a good point.
Do you know what I mean? We're all worried about that. French are worried that the French is getting diluted because of English and it's going to break down. Has that ever happened?
And
a language has broken down, everyone's gone, I don't know what to say anymore.
You hear that in England all the time. People are going, oh, you know, like texting, like the way young people write in text messages these days, it's just the death of the English language. And you're asking, has a language ever actually...
Well, Latin has disappeared, right? Yeah. No one uses that anymore, but it's evolved into something else that we use.
Did Latin die because people started using it wrong?
I think it just evolved because it went into different... Latin evolved into Spanish, French, Portuguese, right. Romance, all these different languages.
So they were using it wrong.
Technically,
French.
They probably were all using it wrong, and then so Latin as the base language kind of went away. It's like the opposite of I can't remember which comedian made this joke where he was talking about his kids growing up and friends of his parents were worried that the kid because he wasn't speaking, he was like 3 years old. And he wasn't speaking and he was a late walker and all this. And as a parent, you're worried about all this stuff. But never have you seen an adult walking around, like crawling on all fours, not being able to speak. Like at some stage as an...
I don't know. I have seen that a few times.
It's only after the pub.
I did grow up in Birmingham.
That explains it.
But so it's kind of the opposite of that for me. It's kind of like, well, has a language ever died where everyone's like, oh, sorry. It evolves into something else.
I think it's right. So slow, the change, that you'd never find yourself suddenly... Exactly. Being at a loss, because I mean, if you look at Old English, like if you read Chaucer or something, it's another language. Like you can't read it; it's completely impossible. But that sort of change is so slow. I suppose it could happen if languages have been actively suppressed. Like Welsh was suppressed, and Breton was suppressed.
Scottish, right? Scots Gaelic is that what it's called?
Yeah. And so I think some languages have been like Cornish. That was a language, have been suppressed to the point that no one is now speaking them. Yeah.
But the original point was that, when people start using a language wrong, like let's say they start making certain so-called...
Is it wrong or wrongly?
Wrong, I would say. Wrongly?
I go wrong.
Wrong,
yeah,
wrong.
Using it wrong.
Yeah.
Using the language in the wrong way.
You think it's an adverb, like use something maybe. Badly or... I did think that in my head. It's like wrongly or wrong. Nah, just stick with wrong.
Yeah.
Use it wrong.
Wrong sounds right.
Because there are certain very good. There are certain adverbs that are the same as the adjective. So you turn an adjective into an adverb by just adding ly or something most of the time.
Yeah.
Like quick, quickly, and so on. But some of them aren't. Like fast. Yeah, and hard as well, because that's a really common mistake that learners
hardly.
Of English...
Hardly, yeah.
Yeah, they say, I worked hardly, or I hardly worked. Hardly worked actually means you didn't work at all, you worked a small amount. It means I worked hard.
Oh, it's very
so,
strange.
Anyway, what was I saying?
Yeah, we were talking about language disappearing.
If they start using the language wrong...
Right, that,
it's going to get diluted or it's going to die.
No, but the reason maybe why Latin... sort of stopped being used is because of the power structure within the Roman Empire, no? They overextended themselves to the point where the languages were spread over such a big distance that they started to develop these communities of their own.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then once the Roman Empire died and the sort of the economic power and the military power went away, then these versions of the language like cropped up. So it's not that... Latin failed because people were using it wrong.
What was different? No, what was different? What was the breakdown? Was the bureaucracy? It wasn't the army. It was if you have a central system, you all need to be on the same page. And they were massive bureaucrats. I mean, I think the Romans are the true French. They're not Italian. They're French. They love bureaucracy, and that keeps everyone speaking the same language through necessity. But once that goes away, that sort of centralized, monetized force, which is obviously reinforced by the army. It becomes just less, you start developing your own language.
And so what was the difference between that and like the British Empire, and why is English still being spoken in Canada and in Australia and New Zealand? Is it just not had enough time to...
I think it's just because it's just a better language.
Because that was a similar sort of... Well, it's strange, isn't it? Because I think... Because it's the same sort of thing with French and Quebec, right? French and Quebec French. They're both French, but French people have a very hard time understanding... people like that live in the countryside in Quebec, even though it's technically the same language, but and it's they for French people they speak it completely incorrectly,
right?
And vice versa. So it's an interesting.
I guess one of the reasons why it's not the same with English is because of the time difference. I mean, the time frame we're looking at between, let's say, when the British Empire was at its height, that was about what, just before the First World War, probably around that time. Yeah, sort of Victorian.
My history's terrible.
Victorian era, like turn of the century.
Victorian, yeah.
Turn of the century, sort of end of the 19th century.
Yeah.
And just over 100 years ago. Whereas the Roman Empire sort of, rose and fell over a period of you know, hundreds of years, right? Mm. So it's just a question of time. Mm.
And also communication. I mean, you know, now we communicate, it's a lot easier to stay in touch and travel, and, you know, it was a lot more isolated.
It's hard to keep a language alive by carrier pigeon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it does seem phenomenal that something so powerful as the Roman Empire and the language could sort of disappear to the point that it's no longer used.
Nobody knows how it was spoken either, do we? We don't know what the
voice sounded
what
like.
What they sounded like.
But even when you look at Shakespeare, I was listening to this program on Radio 4, and it was talking about old pronunciation. So there's a very famous scene in Hamlet. I'm sure you know it, Paul. But there's a very famous scene in Hamlet. No, I'm really teasing. And Hamlet says, frailty, thy name is woman. So frailty, thy name is woman. So weakness, frailty.
Frailty is like weakness.
Frailty is like weakness. And you know he's very angry with his mother and Ophelia. And it's taken often this sort of idea of, like, you know, are women weak? Is Hamlet angry with his mother? But if you look at these old, this is what the Royal Shakespeare Company were looking at old pronunciations of English, they'd have called it like frailty, thy name is woe man, as in a man full of woe, which is Hamlet. He's a man who is full of woe. So there's this sort of ambiguity at the center of the sentence, which can both mean, are women frail? Because, you know, Shakespeare is, Hamlet's very much this ambiguous character. Yeah. We don't know if he's mad, if he's sad, you know, all the rest of it. So the ambiguity in the sentence is, are women frail? Is he angry with women? That's still there. But there is also, within the old pronunciation, this idea of woeful men, sad men, are also frail.
So when that was written, you're saying that line was actually a kind of a joke or like a pun?
It wasn't a joke, but it was ambiguous,
right,
in a way that a modern audience for a long time have just taken it to be a comment about women.
Right.
Shakespeare may very well have been making a comment about both men and women.
Right.
And that's just a pronunciation. That's not even, I mean, it's a long time ago, but it's not that long ago.
Mm. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, yeah. So
a few hundred years, 400 years?
Mid 16th century, I think, Shakespeare around that time.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think we're going through, you know, I think that there's the right now with the technology, there's another kind of quick evolution of the language, which, you know, if you don't catch up with it, or if you don't keep up with it, it's difficult to follow, you know. And sometimes I get comments on Facebook or whatever with an acronym or something like that, and I'm like, oh, it's not BRB, like, I don't know, you know, because when we
BRB?
Like
that, BRB?
BRB, that was like the first acronym, you know.
Really?
No, I know nothing about acronym.
BRB, no. Be right back.
Oh yeah.
Remember that on MSN Messenger?
Right.
No.
That's like, I'm going to go to the toilet.
Yeah, it's just
BRB.
Like, I need to go to the toilet. BR. So you just type in BRB, and because I grew up with that, or I knew that acronym, like, this one was like GG.
GG?
GG.
What's that?
Means good game.
Oh, right.
And it basically means well played.
Oh.
But people use GG mainly in gaming, like when you at the end of when you have like an online game with somebody, you're like, but people actually just say GG. They don't say good game, say GG.
Really?
Yeah. And so I had to look it up, and it was a good game, which basically was like, oh, well played. You know, like it's like, oh, that video is funny, well played. No, GG.
Right,
they just GG it.
I see.
So that's like an evolution of, I wouldn't even say an evolution of language, just new stuff being added to the language that, you know, that makes it complicated, just like all the words that got added, you know, like selfie and all that kind of stuff, that we didn't have a word for, but we did it, you know.
Right.
We used to have, you know, we had cameras, and you used to turn the camera around and flash and hope for the best or whatever, but we never called it a selfie. It was just like, I don't even remember what people used to say.
I don't think there's anything wrong with, like, for example, new words like selfie. I think it's quite useful to be able to call those things something. That, you know, obviously selfies themselves are a bit sad, aren't they? It's a bit kind of a crap direction for our culture to go in. But having new words to describe them is fine.
You say that, though, but, like, even, you know, 30 years ago, people were taking selfies.
Yeah.
I suppose it's just the quantity of selfies. Yeah. I mean, like, now selfies are fatal. I mean, you must have read those articles about, like, trying to get the ultimate selfie, he got run over by a 3-ton truck and, you know, or, like, dropped off the side of a mountain.
Yeah. When we were
eaten by a shark.
We were in California a couple of years ago, and one of the rangers in the park was telling us about how people fall off the cliffs every year trying to get the perfect selfie.
Yes.
They're like these massive drops, and they're like falling off waterfalls and stuff trying to get selfies.
Is that not Darwin's sort of, what is it?
Yeah, the Darwin Award.
The Darwin Award.
The Darwin Award.
We're basically cutting out all
speaking
of
that, I saw
people.
I saw an I follow Jamie Oliver on Twitter. And,
do you?
Yeah, and he was like,
Why wouldn't you follow Jamie Oliver on Twitter?
I don't number?
Well, I don't know, just because...
Why are you so surprised by that? Do you? What on earth are you following?
What is Twitter?
Jamie Oliver!
Because he's a celebrity chef. I just don't see...
Because he posts interesting things and interesting recipes.
I believe
recipes.
You. I'm sorry. I believe and, you. And so, I don't know why I don't know
the
why
thing
I was
today
so
goes, he goes, come on, guys, no more hashtag avocado hand. Just put it on a board. And I was like, what? So this is the tweet. And I'm like, avocado hand? What is this? So I clicked on the hashtag to figure out what was going on. Yeah. Turns out people don't know how to cut an avocado. Meryl Streep has got like a, in 2012 or something, there's a picture of her somewhere in a newspaper here where she couldn't cut an avocado and she like chopped
she cut her finger on an avocado.
Yeah, and I'm like, that's the Darwin Awards. If you don't, like, you know, it's like they call it middle class menace.
What?
Because only middle class people eat avocados. So.
Well, you know, it's become big now, the avocado.
The avocado's become big.
Well, it's a sort of superfood, isn't it? You know, delicious bobo treat.
Right. But you're saying that...
There is often a post-brunch surge in avocado injuries at London St. Thomas's Hospital.
Oh, my God.
Post-brunch surge. Why? What are people doing wrong? What is it?
I think what they're doing is like they're trying...
They're holding it in their hand?
Yeah, I think...
Fools.
Well, you got to hold it in your hand initially and you cut round it. Yeah. And then you twist it, you put it on the thing.
Yeah.
You put the knife through the stone, twist it, and then you're out.
Yeah. Do you know a trick to avocados? So I lived for a long time with a guy from Costa Rica.
They know avocados.
He knows a thing or two about avocados. If you want to keep your
avocado,
he invented the avocado. If you want to keep your avocado green, you keep the pip in. And so sometimes he'd make like a guacamole for like later, and you'd put the pip into the guacamole.
The stone.
You're right. The stone. Put it in, and it keeps it green. Oh, stops it going brown.
There's another tip. If you squeeze lime juice or lemon juice on top of it,
not as good as the stone.
I'll try the pip. If you squeeze lime juice all over it, it'll taste of lime.
Mm.
There you go.
How middle class are we talking about? I think the best tip for an avocado.
Some people don't know how to cut them.
Darwin Awards, yes.
The Darwin Awards, I don't know where it came from. I think originally it was like a book. Is it a book? The Darwin.
I know
Charles Darwin and the origin of species, but where did that thing, the Darwin Awards, come from?
I don't know.
We've got to explain it because, you know, my audience don't know everything that we know.
They don't know everything.
No, I mean they don't have all the same reference points as us. They come from different countries.
Are you asking Google?
I am.
Okay.
The Darwin Awards, I don't know where it started out, but basically it's this thing where people get awarded a Darwin Award when they die in a really stupid way.
Yeah.
And so, you know, like stupid idiots who are playing on the train tracks and they get killed by the train. That's sort of, they win a Darwin Award. And essentially Charles Darwin, as we know, is the guy who wrote The Origin of Species, right? And he sort of came up with the theory of evolution. The idea that the survival of the fittest and those people who kind of die get taken out of the gene pool. And it's sort of nature's way of
evolving.
Evolving. Mm. And so when we lose these people in these stupid ways, that we give them an award as if to say, you know, thanks for kind of,
ridding the human race from your stupid genes.
Yeah, exactly. Because there are a lot of stupid people. Yeah, it started... they were talking about it in a news group discussions, but then it became more formalized with the creation of a website in 1993 and then followed up by a series of books starting in 2000.
Okay. There's also a Twitter account for the Darwin Award, which I follow, and it's one of those things I regularly get sort of sucked into.
Oh, no.
A Darwin Award wormhole.
That looks
Twitter
good.
Account. I'm following
the thing is about
now.
The Twitter
Me too.
Account. Basically, they're just fail videos.
Why would you follow the Darwin Awards on Twitter?
I just was surprised because I didn't think of you as a chef.
I'm a pretty badass cook.
Are
what's
you?
Your, what's your best?
Do you know why I don't think of you as a chef? Because I've invited you to my house for dinner a number of times, but have you ever invited us over for dinner?
You know why? I'll tell you why. We've never invited anyone to our flat because our flat is a shithole.
It's not. I've been there. It's lovely.
I don't care. It's Annie.
She's
a woman.
And a lot of women like
French.
Don't like. Yeah, she's,
yeah, but tell her to do what I do. Just shove it under the bed.
Yeah,
no one will notice.
Under
the bed.
And when her grandmother passed away, we basically got three people's lives in our apartment. We've got our own.
Yeah.
We've got her dad's and her grandmother's because we don't have any other space.
And your cats.
And our cats. So there's boxes everywhere. It's a tip. And that's why we're still waiting for that to event. And we're inviting everyone over.
Right.
But it's not because I can't cook. Can't cook, won't cook. Fucking cook then.
I believe you.
But yeah, I need to, I do cook pretty well actually.
Hmm.
What's your best recipe? Can you run us through it?
Best recipe is... what's my best recipe that I do?
What's the most recent thing you cooked?
The most recent thing I cooked was... It was a roast chicken.
Oof. Go on. Like a roast chicken.
Yeah,
do
you, roast, how, do you have a roast chicken
did
with
you put some bacon on?
No, I didn't do the bacon. But just roast chicken, very simple. Just the chicken, and then
roast it.
Roast it, basically.
Get a chicken. Roast it.
Rub it in olive oil. Rub it in olive oil in salt and pepper.
Yeah.
Cut a lemon. Shove it inside.
It's ass.
It's ass with a couple of herbs. And let it roast for like an hour and 20 minutes.
What temperature are we looking at?
I think it was 210. I can't remember. Yeah. 200 maybe?
Just open? Degrees. Just in an open tray?
Yeah, just,
like,
just in a tray, yeah.
Mm. Yeah, okay. Have you got your roast chicken technique?
I know how to roast a chicken, yeah, but I cook mainly vegetarian food.
All right, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I see.
So that's how I roll. These
Darwin
days.
Award. There we go.
Darwin Awards on Twitter.
Do you cook, Luke?
Yeah, I like to cook. Yeah, I cook more and more since I came to France.
Do you?
Yeah, yeah. My roast chicken. We bought a slow cooker, which is brilliant.
Is it?
Oh, yeah. Really good. It's just there next to the kettle.
Ah. Is that a cook minute? Is that what it is? What is a slow cooker?
It's just basically like a hot pot. And it cooks very slowly over like a period of 8 hours.
That sounds delicious. You should do a boeuf bourguignon.
We do boeuf bourguignon in it all the time.
Because that's what you need, a slow cooker for that.
Yeah, and you can do a roast chicken in it. You stick the chicken in. You
2 days later.
You stick loads of garlic into it and lemon and herbs. And then you put it on like, you know, high for about 6 or 7 hours. And it just cooks really slowly. So the thing about a slow cooker is that none of the moisture leaves.
So never dries out.
It never dries out. You can just cook it forever and ever and ever, and it just never goes dry. And so you cook it for like 7 hours like that, and it's just like super moist and amazing. And then you put it in the oven, and you brown it in the oven for a bit. And it comes out just unbelievable. It just falls apart.
That does sound delicious.
You don't even need to carve it with a knife.
Just look at it.
You just tear the meat off. It just falls off. It's incredible.
We're all going to be getting one now.
Yeah.
So we were talking about language, right?
Yeah.
We're talking about abbreviations that you get in text messages.
Yes.
Like, for example, LOL, which is the most famous one, laughing out loud. My mum uses LOL, but she thinks it means lots of love.
Yes, lots of older ladies do think that.
Yeah, so she persists in using it like that. So she'll write text messages to me going, oh, you know, can't wait to see you at the weekend, LOL. And I'm like, why are you laughing at it? What's funny about that?
Do you know what? I'm very bad at spelling, like homophones, you know, two words that are spelt differently but sort of sound the same.
Yeah.
And now... And I'm really bad at spelling, and I teach 9-year-olds. I'm always having to look things up beforehand because it's awful. But now on my phone, if I type it, sometimes the picture will come up.
Oh, yeah.
You know how like on an iPhone, you'll type and it also give you the icon. Like if you wrote car, you know, the little car.
Does it?
Yeah. Yes. You don't have that?
Yeah, you do.
You do, you just never noticed.
What the?
But sometimes, because I was going to say with the LOL, the little sort of like laughing face.
Oh, so when the text goes orange, you've got the option to turn it into a picture.
Yes.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, you tap on the word and it shows you the little... if you type in car, like car, or cat, sorry, I put in cat, it gives you the thing straight away. Or if you put... what else can you put? Giraffe.
Because if you put LOL...
Giraffe?
I don't think...
If you put an LOL, you get sort of little face laughing. So that's what I was going to say. Like your mum should be alerted to her error with that. Because that also alerts me to when I've made a spelling mistake sometimes because I see the wrong icon.
So you learn English by... Oh, wow. That's
It's a new level of learning English.
Do you think the technology is going to kind of change the language?
I think it already
has,
doesn't it?
Change our language or the way we speak?
English.
I think it changes the way we speak. I think how we use language, and I mean, certainly how we write has changed. When I first moved to France, you had to write a handwritten letter to get a job or nearly anything. And I think finally, I mean, they kind of hold on to things for a really long time, but they take handwriting very seriously and writing. And I think that is important, but we now never write. You know, you don't really write a letter.
I disagree. I think we write now a lot more than we used to.
Really?
No, but we type.
Think about the amount that we... Oh, you mean
I'm talking writing with a pen.
Writing with
I do
your
think
hand.
We communicate through writing yes. more yes. because like I'd much rather text than phone, but you're not writing out things longhand.
Not by hand.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So yes, I do think technology will change how we write because we're writing in a different way.
Yes.
A radically different way.
Yeah. There is that argument that some people have. I remember I had this conversation with someone. And she was going, oh, yeah, like the way young people text these days, like it's just the death of the English language, just like what we were talking about before. But actually, the way that people use abbreviations in text messages and the amount that people write these days is actually evidence of how people are more literate than they used to be.
Also,
and being able to make those abbreviations, like, you know, see you later, you know, it's C-U-L-8-R, apparently... you need to be able to know how to spell and know the right language
Phonics, in
order to be able to abbreviate it in the first place. And the other thing is also that... the other thing is...
One more thing.
He's turning into his BBC voice.
The other thing is that that people have been abbreviating English for centuries. That there's examples of, you know, written letters and things from, you know, years and years ago where they've written loads of abbreviations too.
Yes, like, well, especially if you're writing longhand, it's exhausting.
They're full of abbreviations.
But abbreviations, I mean, Twitter is, 140 characters. To find the best, funniest, most accurate in a short amount of time really means people say, oh, people aren't thinking about what they're writing. But I disagree in this respect as well. People are really thinking about it. They're trying to think of something funny. They're trying to think of something clever. They're trying to find the exact words because they've got no extra space. They can't use 300 words. They can only use, you know, those 140 characters.
Great? Oh, I've just had a great idea for a video sketch. You know, like, we've been drowned in French politics for the last year in France.
Yeah.
And you just hear all the bullshit discourse that all of them are saying, all the candidates are blah blah blah. Wouldn't it be great if they were forced to do like an Instagram video of their thing? Because then you've only got like 10 seconds or 15 seconds on an Instagram story. It's like have a debate via Instagram story, because then it only lasts 8 seconds. You can't be blah. If somebody asks a question, what is your current position on the Eurozone? Blah, blah, blah. 20 minutes later, the question still hasn't been answered. I'm just like, I want to kill these people.
But with your 10-second Instagram thing, all they'll do is, the economy, I'm going to make it better. Thanks.
Yeah. But at least that's something. At least it's better than what they're just being like. Well, actually, if you currently look at the way the Brexit is happening, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
So what are you actually going to do? Well, actually, shut up.
Yes.
So maybe they would think more, so as you said, Amber, and have to reduce, you know, because they know they've got 15 seconds to answer a question. Pow, they're going to know.
So the technology is sort of making people more concise. Do you think it's helping us to be better communicators, or is it making us worse at communication?
I think there's a backlash. You know, I think there's I think technology with email, like it wasn't there, and then it's become so ubiquitous and like so heavy. People are writing emails all the time, and then people get stressed and swamped. So I think now, I don't know because I don't work in business, but I think people are now becoming a bit more reticent about just sending an email, copying everyone in. You know, people are a bit more savvy about how to use technology, because I think it can be incredibly stressful to have a billion emails and you do lose things. So,
but are we better communicators?
Well, I think what Paul was saying...
just skip the question.
That was the politics answer.
What Paul was saying is that, like, it's are we better communicators? He's angry because it's not about how much they're saying, but it's about whether we can trust them or not. So it's is what we're saying.
He's annoyed about the politician who goes around the houses avoiding the question.
Yeah.
Like, for example, if I said to you, Paul, if you're a politician, I said to you, what about the £300,000 worth of Fred Perry shirts that that you've been given? How do you account for this? Don't you think that you know, this is an indictment against you as a candidate for this prestigious position, that you accepted all these T-shirts?
Why is it an indictment? I don't understand.
Well, you know, someone who has questionable links to sporting clothing companies, you know, it sort of brings into question your objectivity and your impartiality in a role of public office. How do you answer these allegations?
Yeah, great. Yeah, clothes. It's nothing to do with politics.
Okay. Okay. You should go into politics. That was quite good.
It was good, yeah.
Yeah, great. Just close. Nothing to do with politics. Yeah.
I wouldn't like, I don't know. I don't know why they always, I mean, it's not any politicians either. It's, you know, whatever, anybody who's interviewed by anybody.
What did we
We were saying, do we communicate better?
Yeah, yes. We better communicate.
We communicate more, but is it better? I don't know.
Yeah, it's hard to tell, isn't it, really? But I mean, how do you measure that? How can you know if we're communicating better or not?
Communicating with whom?
Whom?
With whom?
With whom? Who or whom?
I don't know.
That's why she whom? Let, that's whom why she let the oom those... lingo. It was like whom?
Yeah, because you're like, if we're communicating with whom? Because whom, isn't it?
It's whom.
Technically, it's whom, but who is also fine.
Well, the whom is another.
Do you think the band had this question?
Sorry?
The whom.
The whom.
You were like, should we call ourselves the who or the whom?
Imagine calling yourselves the whom. Most pretentious rock band ever. Talk about the rock
the
band.
The most upper class rock band ever, the whom.
The whom.
Yes,
I think we're fine, it's the whom.
Hello, America. We are the whom. Whom.
With whom are you speaking? Correct.
Yeah. So we're just talking about the making fun of the rock band, which is called The Who, and imagining if they were called The Whom. but the thing about who and whom is a question that we probably need to answer, because my listeners are going, actually, I don't know that one. Do you know when we use
no.
who and when
no,
we use whom?
I never use
whom, ever.
No.
Well, you can easily go through your whole life without having to use whom. You don't need it anymore.
Okay.
It sounds old-fashioned.
Good to know. Thanks for that. Great. So, listeners, there you go.
That's basically it. But they still want to know, don't they?
Yeah.
The difference is whether who and whom are both pronouns, and there's subject pronouns and object pronouns, right? The subject is like I, you, we, she, right? These are subject pronouns. Object pronouns are things like me, also you, her, him, right? So who is actually the subject pronoun, and whom is the object pronoun, all right? Now, subject pronouns...
Well, it cleared that up, didn't it?
The subject is the what comes first in the sentence. Then you have the verb, and then you have the object, all right? For example, I eat pizza, right? I is the subject, eat is a verb, pizza is the object, right? Now, if you have I like her, right? I is the subject... Like is a verb and her is the object. If you switch it round, it becomes she likes me, right? So she is the subject, likes again is the verb, and me is the object. So I is the subject, me is the object. She is the subject, her is the object, right?
So you would say, whom do they like?
Yes.
Rather than who do they like?
Who, yeah. And it's
Jesus
like they
Christ,
like...
did you actually understand something?
Yeah, yeah. Well, once you started giving the examples, I was like, all right, okay.
Yeah.
It's like, she likes who? But whom does she like?
Yeah, exactly. So if it's an object question...
Pow! C2!
Yeah.
Well done.
If it's an object question, which is like, she likes who, questions about the object, then you structure it in that way, who does she like? But the old-fashioned way would be, whom
So that's what
like?
I'd say, whom am I speaking to?
To whom am I speaking?
I know I can use whom. I don't think I particularly
sounds like a brand of a Hoover. I don't know why.
Whom.
The Whom 3000.
The new Whom 3000.
Collects all the dust with no bags.
Collects all the dust and then throws it all over the floor in another part of your apartment. The new Whom 3000.
It's the subjective Hoover.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
right, then. You were about to say something then, weren't you? About whom. You're like, I can use whom.
I can. No, I was saying I feel like I can use whom most of the time.
Do
but,
you?
Do I use whom? Yeah. I just did, didn't I? I do sometimes, but I said,
what was the? How did we start that?
Because we were saying, do we communicate better? Yeah. And I said, depends with whom we are communicating.
Yeah, it depends with who or with whom we're communicating. I'd say just say who. You don't need to use whom anymore. It sounds old fashioned.
Who, who.
Or you could do that. Unless you're an owl.
Whom.
If you're an
that
owl.
Song would be very different. When whom are you? whom?
But no, who are you is correct because who is the subject?
It was a joke.
Oh, sorry.
Fucking language police over ruining a joke.
Sorry.
Have you ever...
Don't let good grammar get in the way of a good joke.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
So yeah, are we better communicators?
Are we better at communicating than we used to be?
How do you measure
that? It's very hard to tell. Have you read recently, have you read a book from the sort of the 19th century? You've read loads of them, Amber Minogue.
I have.
Paul, have you ever read a book from the 19th
century? I've never read a book.
Bullshit.
You read The Naked Chef.
And he read the Goosebumps series.
At least two,
and the autobiographies of certain.
I have read
leaders.
A lot of. I had. I've read a lot of non-fiction. I've never read any fiction.
Okay, well, if you read stuff like Arthur Conan Doyle and even things like Jane Austen and stuff, the way that they constructed their sentences, the way that they used to write in this really, really sort of specific and very kind of articulate way. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like the way that they would address each other. I wonder if I've got an example book here. Just give me a second.
Can we have a look?
No, that's all right. I'll get one.
Amber, so you were saying that you like people with the use of language, and we were talking about Russell Brand earlier on.
Oh.
Russell Brand, for listeners, is an English comedian who has a way with words. He uses very specific words, and he doesn't speak like a normal person.
No.
And he's the interesting thing, he's from a very working class background and has a similar accent to mine, but he uses these big words. And what is your opinion on his use of language?
Well, I think I applaud anyone that uses interesting and diverse words. I think it's great. I love looking up new words. The thing about Russell Brand is it's not the words, it's him, it's the whole package. Because his accent's not like yours. He sounds incredibly Mockney. I mean, I've never heard anyone speak like him. I'm from London, and you know,
he's from Essex, isn't he?
And
no, yeah, Russell
but
Brand.
you meet all different people, and it's just that he sounds like a sort of guy from, you know, 100 years ago. Like, he's kind of got this accent which sounds really false, and then he combines it with this, like, oh, I'm just like, you know, I'm just really working class me, but then uses all these incredibly long complicated words, and it's just
he sounds a bit like a sort of a Victorian chimney sweep.
Yeah, he sounds
who ate a dictionary for breakfast.
Exactly.
And he's like, oh, I haven't half come on over all scatological in the midst of the conversation or something. I can't do
yeah,
it.
Exactly. Can't he do sounds it. False and yeah. Because he's got this accent which is literally from Mary Poppins. He sounds, yeah, like a chimney sweep.
Right.
Go on then, give us a burst.
Okay, well, I've just picked up The Lost World and Other Stories by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle.
Lovely.
Who wrote the Sherlock Holmes books as well, of course. And I'm just trying to... I'm trying to give you a sample of the English that they used to use. I hope this is going to do it. So, what will they say in England of this? My dear Summerlee, I will tell you with great confidence exactly what they will say in England, said Challenger. Challenger is the name of one of the characters. They will say that you are an infernal liar and a scientific charlatan, exactly as you and others said of me. In the face of photographs, faked, Summerlee, clumsily faked. In the face of specimens, ha! There we may have them. Malone and his filthy Fleet Street crew may be all yelping our praises yet. August the 28th, the day we saw 5 live iguanodons in a glade of maple white land. Put it down in your diary, my young friend, and send it to your rag. I don't know, just the way that they used to speak in this. Everything was like very clearly put into words. You know, everything's very, very carefully and clearly stated, everything indicating exactly what they mean to say with every single word. Or is that just the writing style? But I think people used to speak like this.
Potentially, yeah. What will they say of us? You know, it's not something. It's like, what will they say about it? You know, you wouldn't say what will they say of us?
I suppose there's a bigger gap between the Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's level of literacy compared to the chimney sweeps as well. There was this much greater space between everyday conversation. If you look at sort of a book which is trying to show how people, working class people of the time, would have spoken, it would have been a very different kind of language.
Charles Dickens or something.
Exactly, yeah.
Right.
If you get a sort of Oliver Twist and you see how Bill and Nancy are talking.
How are they talking?
I suppose, Bill's really sort of this aggressive, violent guy, and he beats Nancy to death, who's the sort of, you know, tart with a heart.
Spoiler alert.
Spoiler, everyone knows.
I forgot about that.
And he's just, I don't know, I think he's just really gruff and very sort of, because Dickens has got this great way of writing, but I think Bill Sykes, you know, he's very gruff, you know, these short sentences, I don't know off the top of my head.
Is he a bit like Mr. Burlap from
Victorian
Detective?
He's a bit Burlap.
Do you remember that?
How can I forget?
Paul's forgotten because After leaving this apartment, after recording an episode, his memory gets wiped. He meets Mel Smith.
Oh, yeah, that was a great game. I remember
the Victorian detective.
Yeah, that was quality.
Yeah, that was good.
Yes.
All right, that was such fun. Yeah, anyway.
There's I'm more
like a
of
2-year-old
those.
Now. That was good.
It was
Come on,
good.
People.
So I feel like in the past people had this very clear way of speaking, but maybe it's just some of the books I've been reading.
But it still doesn't answer the question whether we're better communicators or not. I don't know. I think everyone just each generation has their way of talking to each other and communicating things. And I think there's no way of measuring if we're better communicators or not, because what's the criteria for the criterion for well, because it's more than one, right?
Right.
Jesus. For measuring
for successful communication.
Yeah, like
it's very good point. We don't know. It's very hard to tell,
because now we probably communicate more than we used to between.
Yeah, I think
we communicate more. I don't know whether it's better or not. You know.
Yeah. Well, depends who you're talking to. Doesn't it?
Yeah. You know,
if the person's boring, then it's worse.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Speaking of which,
moving on.
Do you feel like we've dealt with the subject of language?
I think we've wrapped up language.
We talked about it for 45 minutes.
Is it black?
Yeah, we talked about language for 45 minutes there, completely unplanned. We were supposed to talk about something else.
Yeah.
We ended up talking about language. So maybe we can just stop here and then start again with something else if there's time.
Yeah, what let's do, you think? Do that. Okay. I think it's a good idea.
All right, you know what, actually? You know what? Do you know, actually, this is going to be an anticlimax because you're not going to know who this is. Do you know the linguist, Professor David Crystal?
No.
You don't know who he is?
I've heard of him.
You. Oh, have you?
Yeah, because I studied linguistics. Yeah.
David Crystal, I'm getting him on the podcast.
Are you?
Soon.
Are you?
Yeah,
nice.
I contacted him. He's going to be on the podcast. I've got a few of his books down there.
Very cool.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Well, that's exciting.
That's great.
You're going to have a proper talk about language.
Yeah, he's someone who really knows what he's talking about. I mean, and I mean really.
Yeah, like properly. I used to know what I was talking about when I was at university, and now that I've left, it's all gone.
What did you do then at university? You studied languages, right?
Yeah, so I did French and Spanish. Technically, the degree was called French and Hispanic Studies. So and I made on purpose when I chose the modules, I chose like the non-culture, the non-art history. I wanted to do more linguistics just because, one, it was easier, and two, it was more interesting. I thought I'd learn more from it. So I learned a lot about... there was a whole thing that we did around Latin and the evolution of Latin to Spanish, Portuguese, French, and we compared like all the Latin languages and how, you know, the verb être in French, estar in Spanish, but there's an S, and that's why there's an accent on the E in French, because it used to be ester or whatever. Yeah. And so it was a lot of linguistics in there. And there was a class that I did, which was pronunciation. And I had a book called The Sounds of French, in which you learn the phonetic alphabet and how to properly pronounce. Oh, right.
They teach you how to go.
They teach you how to go.
I thought The Sounds of French would be like or fun.
It's just one page, just going.
as well, which some people do here.
Oh la la.
Okay. All right.
So yeah, that's what I did. Yeah.
Okay. And what about you? Did you study any language at university?
No.
All right. Fine. Good.
English. I studied English.
Studied English. What language or literature?
Literature.
Okay. What did you read at university? Obviously books, obviously. But which bits of work did you read as part
periods.
Of your...
Periods.
Well, no, which actual books, which bits of work did you read for your degree?
Books?
Yeah.
Loads.
Well, which ones?
We had like 4 books a week to read.
Good.
4 a week?
Easily, yeah. We had a lot.
I still hate reading. Really? I don't hate reading. It's not true. But I used to hate reading. I don't know why, because it was like a chore, I think, from school onwards. And so that's why I never did really literature or anything like that at university.
For me, I love reading, but I love sleeping even more, which is, that's my problem, basically.
Snoozing.
As soon as I start reading, I'm like, oh, this is
nice. Comfy.
I'm a little snoozy now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is tough.
4 books a week.
Quite a lot, because I was at Sussex, we did like our main exact my main stuff, which was English, and then you were in a school of study. So I was in English and American studies, and then you'd study things around that. So for example, we did Dante and the Bible and things like that, and that was part of a subject called the Modern European Mind. So it was nothing to do with English literature. Lots of different people from different courses could do that, but then, you know, you're looking at, you know, those big poets like Dante, like Homer, like you know, Virgil, all those guys,
right,
and that was great.
What's your favourite book, Amber?
I don't have a favourite book.
Of all the books you've read recently, which one stood out for you? What would you recommend that I read?
Well, I've been reading a lot of history books at the moment.
Right, well, I don't need to read that because I can just listen to your podcast.
Yes, you can listen to my podcast. But I would say a good book to read is Donna Tartt's The Secret History, which is not a history novel. It's a fiction. Have you heard of it, Donna Tartt? It's really good.
It's in a book. It's a published book.
A published book.
It's not a secret anymore, though,
is it? It's really good. I think you can get it on Audible.
Oh, can you?
Yeah.
Audibletrial.com/teacherluke.
Still on that?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, blad.
Yeah, man. Yeah. So what's all that about then? Secret history?
Secret history, it's it sort of happens in America, and it's this group and they're studying like ancient Greek, and it all gets a bit wrong and they're all get up to all sorts of naughtiness.
Sounds a bit like Prometheus, the Alien prequel.
Oh, really?
It's not really, not at all. Just my mind drifted towards aliens.
That's a good book. Let's have a cup of tea.
Okay.
Cup
of tea and a break. Thanks for talking to me, you two. The rambling conversation about language.
Which is now turned into song.
Okay, then.
That's when you know it's time to finish the podcast. And goodbye.
English. Plain English, creep.
English. English.
I speak English now.
Yes, I learned.
So there you are. That was our conversation about language. I hope you enjoyed that. I invite you to take part in the conversation by now getting into the comments section and leaving your thoughts. Let me remind you of the questions that you heard at the beginning, just to kind of give you some ideas. Maybe you can answer some of these questions in your comments. So here are those questions again. And what are some common errors that native English speakers make in English? Like, for example, the split infinitive or writing should of instead of should have. And things like saying I'm good instead of I'm fine. And if that even is considered to be an error. So, you know, what are some common errors? How do English speakers feel about mistakes in English? Are some errors worse than others? How does the language evolve? And are errors a part of that process? Has your language or English changed much in the last 300 years? Is your language or English getting worse than before? Are standards declining? Has a language ever totally broken down and just died due to falling standards? Why did Latin die out as a language? Why do languages die? And is there ever a threat that that would happen to English because people are using apostrophes in the wrong way? On a slight tangent, what is the safest way to cut an avocado? Back on track, how does Charles Darwin relate to language development? What effect is technology having on the language? Are we better at communicating than we used to be? And how do you even measure that? How do you know more about, not how do you know more about English grammar? You just read a grammar book, I suppose. But no, do you know more about English grammar and things like that than most native speakers of English? And I'd like to remind you of an episode I did years ago with my brother. Oh, God, which episode is that? It's something like episode 40-something? Episode 50, maybe? I'm going to just check the archive here and see if I can find it. But I did an episode with James. I think the first, was it the first time he was on the podcast? It's called Discussing Grammar with My Brother. And I'm just trying to find it. Anyway, in that one, I got a copy of English Grammar in Use, the famous blue grammar book, and started asking him some questions about things like present perfect and nouns, verbs, and adjectives. And the idea was to see how he would sort of respond to those questions as a normal native English speaker. I say normal, I mean, you know, he's fairly normal.
It's not completely normal. But anyway, that was the idea. It's episode 53, discussing grammar with my brother. And it's interesting to see how much he knows about grammar. So you could check that one out. It's on the sort of same lines as this. So do you know more about grammar than most native speakers of English? If you listen to episode 53, you can see if you know more than my brother does or did at the time. And do you know more about English grammar than Paul Taylor? And are you better at cooking than Paul Taylor? So there are a few of the questions that we dealt with. There were some unanswered questions in there. You can try and give us your thoughts on those. Like, for example, how do you measure language decline? Are we better at communicating now than we used to be? I think I might be asking David Crystal about some of those things when I speak to him soon. Yeah, remember that. I'm going to interview the world's leading voice on language, Professor David Crystal, and it'll be a chance to ask him various questions about language. I've already collected some questions from my listeners, and I have loads of my own to ask him as well. But feel free to continue sending in your questions. You can do that in the comments section of the website, and I'm going to pick some of those questions out and ask him. Okay, so there will be hopefully some answers to those unanswered questions that you heard in this episode. All right then, so I hope you enjoyed listening to another Amber and Paul episode there. There's going to be another one coming soon. We usually record two when we get together, so there should be another one coming soon. All right, good. Don't forget to join the mailing list. That's where you can get instant access to the page for every new episode. It just drops into your inbox. Not your inbox, I don't know what that is. It might drop into your inbox as well, but you probably wouldn't realise, because you probably wouldn't even think of looking inside your inbox, because you don't even realise that you have an inbox in the first place. They don't exist, do they? I'm going to see. Googling inbox. What is inbox? Nothing. It's coding stuff. So it does exist, but it's in the world of coding, which it's all Greek to me, isn't it, that stuff? Very important, nevertheless. All right, anyway, so join the mailing list. And an email with the link to the new episode will drop into your inbox very discreetly. Just there. Just thought I'd send you an email just to let you know there's a new episode. You know, it's very discreetly done, and it's all good. All right. Thanks again for listening. Speak to you again on the podcast very, very soon. But for now, it's time to say goodbye. Bye, 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 bye. Thanks for listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.